Highland Sport, brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure. For the Donegal fan who can't make it home this Christmas, why not send them a Donegal GAA Ultimate Supporters gift box? See michaelmurphysports.ie.
A very good evening. Welcome along to another edition of The Score. Coming up on tonight's programme, we'll be hearing from Donegal minor manager Luke Barrett ahead of their Ulster Championship encounter with Tyrone, which is taking place this coming Sunday. Plus, we'll get the thoughts out of the counties of Tyrone and Derry from Alan Rogers and Michael McMullen ahead of their respective games this weekend as well at minor level. Martin McHugh will give us his thoughts ahead of the Dublin Mayo All-Ireland final, and Liam Blanche will have his usual predictions in our ahead of the game section. But we're going to start with boxing. St Johnstone man Brett McGinty will make his professional ring debut on Friday evening. McGinty will fight Jan Arden in a middleweight four-round contest on the McHennessy promotion in Redditch, England. The fight is in the undercard of the British light heavyweight title clash between Shaquem Peters and Craig Richards. Brett, who signed with Hennessy Promotions this week, is managed by LA-based Shear Sports and is trained by Ricky Hatton in Manchester. It's been a 9-month wait for McGinty, who was to have his first outing in March, but that was cancelled due to COVID. I've been speaking with Donegal Boxing Board President Peter O'Donnell about Donegal's latest professional prospect. Well, I suppose, Peter, young Brett McGinty has waited quite a long time for this. It's like all sort of sport across the board. There was delays and things seem to get going again, then there was further delays, but eventually he's going to get into the ring, making his professional debut. It's going to be a big night on Friday for Brett McGinty.
A very, very big night, watching, and I'm delighted for him. I'm really over the moon to see Brett getting his debut and the professional ranks over him, because he's waited, as you say yourself, a long time since he was to make his debut way back in March, and due to COVID, that was all knocked in the head, and he hung on there and he was waiting and waiting and waiting, and he was in Manchester, kept himself in good shape. So he didn't, you need to be mentally very strong to be in Manchester on your own there, week in, week out, training, sparring, what have you. And he's waiting actually 9 months, like the morning night day he gets his debut. Yeah. So I think it's going to be a great night for him, and he'll be glad to get the first one over him when he gets his baptism on morning night. I think he'll be on the right road to a good bit of success in the professional game, hopefully.
Yeah, he seems to have a good team around him, so he does at the minute. Peter, I suppose first up, you mentioned about training away and keeping himself right. The man that's training him knows all about winning big titles and being involved in big fights, Ricky Hatton. I suppose you couldn't ask for better in your corner, could you?
No. He has got it. Now, Ricky Hatton had it all, like, and he's been around the block. He has done it all, the former world champion, you know, great boxer, and I would say he'd be a very, very good trainer as well, you know, and it seems to be a good combination as well, himself and Brett. And he's promoted by Shear Sport Management, the same management as Jason Quigley, fellow Donegal man, and he's getting promoted by Mick Hennessy, another gentleman of boxing, looks after his boxers very well, keeps them all busy, and he puts on the shows as well. So he has it all going for him, you know.
Yeah, and if he comes through this fight now, obviously this is the first pro one, and get through this, and then there'll be others to come. I suppose it's important that he signed up with Hennessy, that he's not going to be in America so far from home, that the bulk of the stuff's all going to be in the UK, which isn't too far away, Peter.
That's right. It's a big plus there, being on with Mick Hennessy, like, because he'll get great exposure here, you know, and he'll build up a very big fan base here as well, you know, because I think he's tailor made for the pros, like, yeah. You know, he's all action, attack and style, like, you know, a lot of body work and stuff that'll suit him. He can wear opponents down over the longer distance or rounds, like tomorrow night will be a four rounder to get him broken, but I think he'll go a long way with a wee bit of luck in the pro game, watching.
Yeah, and I suppose in the early days of the pro game as well, it's all about getting fights and as many as you can under your belt, Peter.
That's right, Oisin. Building up a profile and being busy and kept busy, and I would say there's no matter better man or two men to keep him busy as Mick Hennessy and Ricky Hatton. They'll look after him good. I think they're a good duo as well, you know, and they're busy, and Hennessy's putting on the fights and looking after his boxers.
Yeah, you watched Brett, of course, from he was a very young lad coming up through the ranks, and he fought out of Oakleaf and Derry, and he is a Donegal man, but I'm sure you've seen a few fighters now at this stage go pro from when you've been involved, and we've got another one now from Donegal.
Ah, it's great. It's great for Donegal and great for Donegal boxing, you know, seeing the good freedom come through. And Brett, like, he is a very distinguished amateur career. Like, he was an 8-times national champion, and he got a silver at the Commonwealth Youths and a European bronze at the Schoolboys, you know. So he knows his way around the ring, like, and I would say he adjusts very well to the pro game too, you know.
Yeah. Would you expect him to win tomorrow night and do well in his first number of years in pro then, Peter?
I would say he should... I should now, actually, I would hope so anyway, you know. I think he's, as I say, he's got that, he's tailor-made for the pro game, and I think he'll come good, like, you know, and I would say he could be out there within a month, maybe again. McKenna says a lot of shows lined up, and he could build up a good reputation, you know, within a couple of months here with McKenna, you know, as he climbs the ladder.
Yeah.
But he'll just be taking it step by step, you know, and not be a breath. We'll be loving just the same as the rest of the boxers. Take one fight at a time, you know.
We haven't been speaking to you for a while, Peter, obviously, with everything's going on. Just finally, you're keeping safe and doing well?
Keeping safe and doing well, Oisin. I would say, but our own sport, the amateur sport, like, it'll take a bit of a hit, you know, through this COVID and one thing and another. When we'll get back to full time again, I don't know. Like, as you know, there, the elite championships was to take place
in
January, and now they've been put back too as well, cancelled out, and European stuff has been cancelled as well. So we just actually don't know where we stand at the minute, Oisin, but
yeah,
hopefully we can get back again soon, you know.
Listen, delighted to talk to you again, Peter. You keep well and stay safe, and I'm sure we'll be speaking to you real soon again.
Thanks very much, Oisin. Thank you.
Peter O'Donnell speaking to me earlier today, and the best of luck, of course, to Brett McGinty in his professional debut bout tomorrow night in Redditch in England. Moving on to Gaelic games. Donegal and Tyrone will meet in Sunday's Ulster Minor Football Championship quarter-final in Ballybuffet. It's been a long wait for the young Donegal side, who at one stage thought the competition would not be played. The sides met in the league earlier in the year, a game which Tyrone won by 2 points. Since then, Donegal have managed just 5 sessions in preparations for the derby at McCool Park. Donegal minor manager Luke Bard has been telling Tom Comack the group are fully focused on the game, despite the lockdown interruptions and the Christmas build-up.
Yeah, listen, it's been a long wait, so it has, and there's been several setbacks along the way, so I've just... delighted for the lads to get the opportunity to put on the Donegal jersey on Sunday. They've had a hard year like everybody else, and I suppose even these guys maybe suffered a wee bit more than say the seniors, because, you know, they were pulled in the 11th hour the last time, so they'd endure, you know, another 6 weeks of lockdown and individual training and stuff. So listen, we're delighted for them to get the opportunity to play on Sunday.
Had you given up hope of it being played?
Yeah, look, if I'm being completely honest, when it was pulled, you know, on the Wednesday night, previous to the last game, or, you know, it was supposed to be...
But that was back in September, was it October?
Back in October, yeah. We did, realistically. We thought this was going to be the end of it. And I suppose the use of the word paused by the GAA officials maybe indicated that perhaps it might be played maybe later down the line, or maybe, you know, the initial thought would be maybe they would move this to a special under-18 competition next year. We certainly didn't expect it to be played, and you know, I suppose the fact the way Donegal was, particularly in the last lockdown as well, the numbers being so high, we didn't have any access to the players over that 6 weeks, you know, and so again, that was going to be difficult. So we did give up hope. But listen, after a couple of weeks, I suppose there was murmurs starting that it would possibly start again. So the guys were back doing a wee bit of individual training, so they were, and then we got them back then, you know, when the lockdown was lifted.
Yeah, and before we look back at that, but you would have maybe started maybe around this time last year, wouldn't you, kind of scouting the county?
Yeah, listen, we had a trials last year around, you know, December time, start of December, so we did, and, you know, we had the guys doing a bit of maybe gym work and individual programs over the Christmas period and started training in January, so, you know, for all intents and purposes, we've been working with these guys for on and off for 13 months, but you've had very little access to them at the same times that you had.
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, when you think of it now, actually, you had played a couple of games in the minor league, hadn't you, when the pen was pulled?
We did. We had two games in the minor league, but listen, it was very, you know, that's a lifetime ago now in terms of the squad. So it is, and the way, you know, the way things have fallen. We had players missing at that stage, and we had kind of, we were just trying to find our feet ourselves. We had very little game time, you know. So it's a lifetime ago, really.
Yeah, and then the lockdown came. Had you much contact, or did you get to do much over the summer? We heard of a lot of senior teams doing having sessions on Zoom and all that type of thing. Did you get any of that done?
We kept constant contact with them via Zoom meetings. So we did. We had a Zoom meeting probably once every week, and the guys were doing a lot of individual training as well. So we would have kept in contact through. Through the parents' WhatsApp group as well, you know, and kept in contact with them fairly regularly. So we did, and we got a very good buy-in from the parents. So we did, and they were, you know, they were very supportive of us, trying to keep in contact with the fellas. So we trained hard. They trained hard themselves in the individual programs, and then obviously we kind of met up, and the Zoom meetings were more kind of just to kind of stay connected. And you know, we had different things like quizzes and maybe a couple of guest speakers on that, you know, that kind of kept the spirits up during that period, but we didn't actually see the players at all over the summer period.
Yeah, and of course then the club kicked in, and that was the first opportunity they got to see some action.
Yeah, and I think, I suppose, a credit to them, you know, they went into the club season fairly good shape because of the programs that they were doing. So they did, and then, you know, again, the club coming first this year was a massive opportunity for them, because when they came back to us in September, then they were in fairly good shape. Listen, you can't beat club football, and you can't beat games for them to develop. So they did, and that was very important for us as well when they came back in, that they were in good shape coming back in from the club season.
I know I spoke to you at the time, and you were a little concerned that you hadn't got maybe enough time to prepare. How is that time gone?
Well, the reality of the situation is, Tom, we haven't had much time to prepare. You know, and people would say that maybe that everybody's in the same playing field, but, you know, the lockdown in the north was different this time. You know, the elite teams were allowed to train, so they were. So, you know, I'd assume that Tyrone were training for that 6 weeks. You have to give them the respect they were, and they were allowed to. Our lockdown was different, so that meant that players were back to doing individual programs again. And again, that was very difficult, because it was a lot easier, you know, selling the championship in the summertime when, you know, there was long evenings, and you know, we had a really difficult time with lockdown, but the one thing that was very good during the lockdown was the weather. So the lads were able to get out, you know, into their out in the roads or out in the back gardens or anywhere that lived kind of in locality. Some guys live very close to the beaches as well. So it was a lot easier going out then when the ground was a bit harder and the sun was in the sky. You know, you're coming back now from school. It's dark, it's wet, it's miserable, and they don't have access to facilities as well. So this lockdown proved particularly difficult for us, so it did. And as I said, we only got them back there 2 weeks ago when our lockdown was lifted. So we've only had about five sessions with them, really. You know, we'll have another session with them before Sunday, but, you know, five, six sessions is very, very little time to prepare for an Ulster championship game.
We see where Tyrone has been affected. Their preparation has been affected. I don't think it's going to affect the team on the day or the squad on the day, but it's been affected by COVID regulations, and not players picking it up, but having contact. Have you had any of that?
Yeah, listen, there hasn't been a session. We haven't had somebody missing, Tom, from via close contact or via, you know, a known case within in schools. You know, we've had a couple of players that, you know, classmates of theirs had been involved in cases. You know, last week we had three players out the whole week as a close contact. So listen, it's affected us as well.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any point in making a big deal of it, because the way we look at it is it's part and parcel of what's going on. And I have to give massive credit to the players as well, because their honesty throughout this has been very, very good. You know, any time that they think they might have even been exposed to a possible contact, you know, they've let us know, and we've taken taken precautions at all levels. So anybody that was in any way possibly involved in a case, you know, hasn't been near the squad. And, you know, some players have missed maybe three or four sessions or weeks from it. Other players have been lucky enough that they haven't missed any, so they haven't.
You reveal the squad during the week. It's by and large last year's under-16 squad, isn't it, or more or less?
Yeah, there's a good few from under-16s last year, but listen, there's also a good few from, you know, that's come in this year, and there's one or two from the under-16 squad of this year as well that are involved. So listen, there's a really nice mix of players that have been around development squads and other players that, you know, that this is their first time involved in development squads or into you know, county minor setups as well. And that's just the nature of young men. They develop at different rates, so they do. You know, I suppose I was fortunate enough that I've seen an awful lot of club football between under-16 and under-18 for the last 2 years where, you know, you get maybe exposed to seeing players, you know, operate at the club level, which is a really good level to see them at, you know, their own level. And so we've a good mix of everybody.
Yeah, and from when you started out and you finalised the panel at the start of the year, has there been much change or much alteration?
Yeah, we've actually lost 3 or 4 players from the start of the year. So we have, you know, we've lost Ben Muller. The goalkeeper Ben, you know, was having a problem with illness at the minute, so he's not able to join the squad. And then there's actually other 2 players have left the squad due to work commitments. They've actually moved away, and they're working. One's actually working down the country, and the other working in the fishing industry. So they weren't able to commit to us, and I suppose that's the big thing about this year, Tom. You know, we would have felt that it was difficult for everybody, but I found it probably particularly difficult for these young men because, you know, there was a sense of almost being lost, you know, and some players have dealt with it really well and some players have dealt with it in a different way. So it affects everybody differently, so we had to respect those decisions as well.
Tyrone, are the reigning Ulster champions? They have a number of those players back again this year. They came to Ballybuffet last year, went away with a couple of point win, came to O'Donnell Park earlier this year in the league and recovered from a heavy defeat against Kavanagh and won by a couple of points as well. So you know what you're up against?
Yeah, listen, as I said, you know, previously, you know, Donegal are by far the dominant team in Ulster at senior level at the minute, but, you know, in terms of underage football in Ulster, Tyrone and Derry are the benchmark, and Tyrone, particularly over the last couple of years, Colly Holmes is coaching them, and listen, Colly's a fantastic operator, and he's got them really, really well set up, and you know, the last 2 years, they've come to Ballybuffet in the championship, and they've beaten Donegal, and you know, we have said that to the lads as well, that, you know, anything can happen on the day, but it's important to deliver performance, because I probably would have felt that over the last 2 years, particularly watching the minors, you know, they would have probably been disappointed with the performance on the day. So, you know, that's all we've been saying to the lads. If we can deliver a performance that, you know, and be competitive right to the very end, then, you know, we're in with a chance. But if we don't reach that level of performance, it'd be very difficult. So that's all we're focusing on.
And have you everybody you want?
Well, listen, we have a couple of injuries at the minute. We had one kind of long-term injury and a couple of niggles that, you know, we're not very confident in, but that's the nature of football. And listen, we're not going to make excuses for that either, because I'm sure every team is like that as well. Just, I suppose, the nature of the stop-start nature of it. It's very difficult for the lads to keep that level of fitness and up the whole time and keeping their bodies protected. So, listen, we do have a few niggles. I would like a cleaner bill of health, but we won't complain.
Donegal minor manager Luke Barrett. By the way, that Donegal Tyrone minor championship game will be live this coming Sunday here on Highland. As from the 1 o'clock throw-in time, I'll be joined in commentary by Martin McHugh, and our coverage will be in association with Gael Oil Fuel. You can trust the Claddy Bridge in Castlefin. Well, as we know, Tyrone are the reigning minor champions at provincial level. Alan Rogers of the Ulster Herald has been telling Tom about Donegal's opposition this weekend.
Well, I suppose it's a team that really hasn't got the chance to, like, so like every other county in the country, hasn't really got the chance to develop this year because of obviously the disruptions caused by COVID-19. But prior to the lockdown in February, they had a mixed start to the competition. They lost very heavily to Cavan by 2-10-0-4, and that game was up at Gervahe. Now, in the context of this weekend's game, they may take more solace from the result against Donegal, which was a game that they won by 1-10-1-8. One of the things, I suppose, that will benefit them is the fact that not only did they win the All-Ireland title in 2017, that people will remember it for Dara Canavan's goal in the final against Roscommon, but Colin Holmes, who's the manager, has been sort of around throughout that time, and as a result is bringing a good degree of experience in terms of organising the team, and I suppose ensuring that whatever disruption has been caused by the you know, by the lack of action over this past 9 months, that has been minimized as much as possible. So from that point of view, there would be hope maybe rather than expectation going into this game.
And as we say, they are the defending champions. Are there many survivors from last year?
There's quite a few, and the team has a good, you know, has a good mix. I suppose one of the benefits that Tyrone have had over this past few years is the development squads, and that means that you don't maybe just don't have players from the main Grade One teams, but you have a good spread of players from throughout the grades. Now, Carrickmore and Arbaugh and Oma have been the three sort of dominant teams in the minor competitions over this past couple of years, and they're well represented, but I think there's somewhere in the region of maybe 13 or 15 clubs represented in the squad, which is I suppose an illustration of the fact of how balanced it is, and it's an illustration of the fact that they really are trawling the county for, you know, if there's a player who is capable of making the grade, then he is being identified and is getting that opportunity. So there is a good balance there, but obviously there's a couple who would be to maybe stand out and who were impressing prior to the lockdown in those two games against Cavan and Donegal.
And who are the players to look?
There's a number in defence. You have a fella called Joe Hamilton. Now, he has been doing well in around the full back line. Another, it's funny how names keep cropping up, and one of the things that we're starting to see is the names that were prominent back in the 90s on Tyrone senior teams, they're now coming back underage teams. Larkin McGarty from Carrickmore is one. Rory Canavan from, obviously, Eric O'Kearn, the son of Peters, he's another. We have Sean O'Donnell from Chillick, who's, you know, who has been doing well scoring. And, you know, so you have Conor Cush from Donegmore, another prominent name, if you remember the Cush and Canavan double act that there was during those years. So those are some of the players who would be expected to make their mark on, you know, in the game against Donegal.
And we've reading during the week where their preparations have been hit by COVID.
Yeah, that's right. I suppose it's one of those things that we have to expect at this stage that you know, the things don't go according to plan. But both managers, I think, are fairly confident that they've got that they've got their strongest team available, that they'll be able to have that team out, and that I think they're confident that they will do well in the game. Now, obviously, I suppose what they're saying is the match against Donegal in March is far too long ago now to make any real difference to the outcome in this one.
Alan Rogers of the Ulster Herald. Elsewhere on Sunday, Derry will play Armagh in the minor competition. Derry will be hoping that they can make home advantage count. They also throw in on Sunday at 1 o'clock in Owen Beg. Michael McMullen of the County Derry Post has been telling Tom Comack about this current minor Derry side.
On paper, Tom, it's billed as a very good minor team, but the problem with minor level is that paper doesn't mean an awful lot, and whenever it comes to championship, you're sort of hoping that they'll get over the first round and develop, but there's a reasonably positive vibe there. From talking to the manager a couple of times over this past few weeks, the one thing he has said a lot of is that they seem to be really together. And at one point they decided to give them a break, and they nearly had to force the lads to take a break. There's a serious effort there, and there seems to be real pride in playing for Derry. And the boys themselves, there was a concern that the season would be deleted and they would be the only team in Derry that wouldn't get a chance to wear the Derry jersey. So they're taking it very much as a positive. They won the under-15 competition in memory of Brian McLernan in 2018. They beat Cavan in the final, and then last year they beat Donegal in the Bencana Cup final, 7-7. Raymond Dillon with a goal being the deciding score. But on the way to that win last year, Armagh beat them. So that's sort of where the team is, Tom. Armagh and Derry both played Monaghan in the league. Derry won by 6 and Armagh won by 3. But the problem is, that seems like last season.
Yeah, you know, a lifetime away. Martin Boyle is the new manager. It's not a name we're that familiar with.
He's a teacher in St. Connor's. college. Ironically, he's a Derry under 17 manager, and Paddy Bradley, the under 20 manager, teaches in the same school. So you can imagine there's a lot of football talk there. He's a Ballinascreen man. He would have been involved heavily in Ballinascreen underage teams, and he would have been in management teams with their seniors. When Kieran Mina was the Dromore manager, Marty was in with him, and he was in with Paddy Bradley coaching with Newbridge, so he would have a fair level of experience, and he would have a good knowledge of the local underage scene. He's involved with the development squads again last year, and Dermot Scullion and Darren McShane, who are in with him, Tom, they were in charge of the under-15s 2 years ago, so there's a continuity factor there as well. I know that from speaking to Marty over this past few weeks, they're just glad to get a chance at it, because I'm probably, Tom, from talking to the Donegal Mainer managers, I'm sure they're the same. They thought the season was gone, you know, so here they are preparing for championship.
Yeah, so it's really starting from a cold start, but it applies to everybody, really, so it's a level playing pitch as such.
Yeah, but, you know, there seems to be a degree of optimism creeping back into the county again, which is good to see, and it's well needed. You know, the under-20s had won Ulster under Mickey Donnelly, and, you know, Damien McAuleen sort of kick-started this whole thing with 2015. He won the first minor championship in 13 years. And they actually beat Donegal that day in Clonus, a Donegal team that was tipped for the All-Ireland. Michael Carroll, the Wales, Jason McGee, I think, was on that team. For me, that was the result that really kick-started Derry, and they won Ulster that year. And continually, every year, they've been either in Ulster finals or really challenging. And it's back to the time in the 80s and the 90s when Derry was at the forefront of minor level. You know yourself, Tom, Donegal and Tyrone dominated for a long time, so now Derry are starting to creep back in there, and I suppose the thought process would be that this is a reasonably good Derry minor team, but I was reading, was it Mark Coonan in today's Irish News, he described this year's minor championship as really, really open, because there is no form. Derry have a few survivors back from last year. Team captain Matthew Downey, he was on the team last year. Adam McGonigal's back from last year in the defence. Charlie Damon's back. You know, so there is that wee bit of continuity back from last year. There would be a concern about Callum Downey. He played for Lavey in the club championship. His training was sort of curtailed with a groin injury. They're maybe hoping to get 10 minutes out of him if he's available, but, you know, he's an exceptional ball winner up front, and he would be a great addition to them. The other thing, Tom, is that potentially you could have a couple of lads from Desmond Martin creeping into this minor team. You know, they've moved down to junior level, you know, with their senior team, but they put in a real good level of effort with their underage, and, you know, Connor Shields and Lachlan Murray could be pushing for starts in this team. And when you talk about Damien Cassidy's proposals a few weeks ago about the spread of clubs and, you know, trying to lift the standards, you know, two lads coming in from that club and pushing for starting places is a huge plus for Derry as a county.
Michael McMullen. Staying with Gaelic games, the last action of the most unusual season in GAA history is poised to deliver what we hope will be a memorable occasion on Saturday, as Dublin bid to become the first team to win the All-Ireland Senior Football title for a sixth successive year, while Mayo are attempting to end a 69-year wait for the visit of the Sam Maguire. Martin McHugh says that anything is possible in what has been a very, very different year, but it's hard to bet against the Dubs this weekend.
Well, Oisin, anything can happen this year. Anything's possible. As we found out ourselves in Donegal, everybody was chatting about playing Dublin all Ireland semi-final, and the only people that weren't thinking like that was Cavan. So expect the same situation this point, is that from Mayo's point of view, is that they're thinking, you know, that they have a great chance and everything else. But yeah, it definitely is a different year. An All-Ireland final, the first on a Saturday. Normally you'd have replays on a Saturday and everything else, but having an All-Ireland final, I would say this is definitely the first All-Ireland final that's been played on a Saturday evening, it not being a replay. So yeah, Mayo fancy themselves, but it's hard to bet against this Dublin team, Oisin. Yeah.
What about that Dublin team? Obviously, Desi Farrell's in. It's his first year in charge. He has made changes from the Jim Gavin era. So this is a big year for him. This is a big day for Desi Farrell and a new management setup.
Yeah, it is. You know, and I mean, definitely, you know, the great thing from a Dublin point of view is that Pat Gilroy, when he left, just went away into the sunset. Then Jim Gavin, no big deal about it, just moved on, and Desi Farrell's taken over now, and as we call him down our way, the Crov man, Desi. And the thing about him is that, you know, as you said exactly, Oisin, he has changed it, and he's definitely, you know, the players he's taken in made a difference. I think a couple of players maybe came back and they weren't in the shape that he wanted them to be in after the COVID break and everything else, and they haven't got into the team yet, and they're chopping at the bit to get in there and everything else. So look, they look hungry, they look very sharp, and I heard that, I think it was last week, that they did something like a 3-hour training session or a game situation that lasted for 3 hours. So look, there's a big competition with places on the team and everything else. So yeah, they probably needed that, you know, because even taking the Kerry game last year in the Lion final, they struggled the first day and probably should have been beaten the first day. I was at that match, and maybe if David Moran just had to get his head up, he carried the ball into traffic, Stephen Cluxton's right out, and there was a couple of Kerry players inside and it didn't happen. But so that hunger's back. So you feel the players he's put in have made a difference, you know, and have definitely helped the situation. So big task for Mayo.
But they haven't been tested yet, Martin. That's the other side of it. Let's look at the championship, the way Dublin have come through. They really haven't got out of second gear, have they?
Yeah, and suppose, you know, that we know in Donegal, if we go back to 92, the Dublin team that year to the Lion final weren't tested, and they were the same situation. And the Dublin and the 2014 situation from a Donegal point of view was the exact same situation, where they hadn't been tested either. And when the test comes, how they'll react to it. Now, I still think, Oisin, this is a different Dublin team. You know, they've got players on the field that are leaders and able to make the right decisions on the pitch and everything else. But you're exactly right. They have not been tested. Has Mayo got that ability to test them or not? I mean, Mayo in the past, in 2012, All Ireland semi-final, when everybody said this Dublin team wouldn't be beaten, the year Donegal got to the final, everybody thought it was going to be Donegal and Dublin in the final, and Mayo ended up beating them. So I think that, yeah, if there are probably people say if there are two teams in the country, or maybe three, will have Kerry out of it, there's Dublin and Mayo that's capable, or Donegal, sorry, and Mayo that's capable of beating a Dublin team on a given day, that it has happened in the past. I think you're right there. But I still think that, you know, looking at them, they know exactly what it takes. And we look at Mayo's All Ireland semi-final last year. At halftime, I was at the game. The Mayo supporters felt they were really in a big chance. They give them a standing ovation coming off the field and everything else. And they end up, they ended up 10 minutes into the second half, the game was over.
Yeah. Is it a case then that Mayo won't fear this Dublin side, given maybe past history matches, and obviously they went to replay in one of the games as well, Martin? Or is that scenario going to play in their head, that they know that Dublin can go under those extra gears if needed?
Yeah, I think that's exactly a good point, Oisin. I mean, when we analyse and look at it, the question is this Mayo team as good as the 2017 team that really put it up to Dublin? You know, people would say that Mayo are not as good as they were then, and Dublin are better. But if we look at it from a Mayo point of view, this is definitely a lot of their players' last chance. The Killian O'Connors, Jermot O'Connors, Aidan O'Shea's. You feel, you know, there's Lee Keegan's in them, and it's not easy. They've come up against the greatest team we've ever seen playing Gaelic football. But this is their last chance. Now, the preparation and everything else is different. They're not the same hype that used to be about Mayo teams in the past. They're not going to be a crowd there. Is this going to help Mayo or not? It doesn't seem to affect Dublin anyway. Is it going to help Mayo or not? It's probably, you know, they have a great chance from the point of view is they definitely deserve an All-Ireland, because they've been, you have to say, the second best team in the country, you know, knocking on the door since this great Dublin team have come along and everything else. But they're the one team that hasn't won an All-Ireland. And in that time, Donegal have won one and Kerry have won one, but Mayo haven't. And Mayo have probably been the most consistent team of the three of them teams against Dublin that there. So, yeah, they have a chance and everything else, but I feel if Dublin will lose it, it'll be Dublin will lose it more than Mayo won it. And it's very hard to see what we've seen from this bunch of players, Dublin players, very hard to see them losing it, Oisin.
Yeah. Just finally then, Martin, this is one of the greatest teams, probably the greatest team ever to play Gaelic football. A lot of calls have been made about splitting the county into two or splitting it into four. Do we not need to be sitting back and being maybe more respectful to what this Dublin team have achieved rather than throwing, I suppose, ammunition or shots out that things have to be separated in the county?
I think you're exactly right, Oisin. And I mean, I think admire them, because, you know, probably people will say that we're totally against defensive football, that they actually save Gaelic football, the way they play and everything else, and see the way they play. And they're a joy to watch. I love watching them. They're brilliant to watch. We didn't talk about Split and Kerry in the 70s and 80s when they were hammering Ulster teams and Connacht teams when they were coming up and hammering them, and the only team was giving them a game, that was an odd team, was Dublin. So now I think we have got to enjoy it and everything else. I think maybe the fun has to be looked at from a GA point of view, not the fun they're capable of getting themselves, you know, which fair play to them, they're able to get big sponsorship and everything else. But I think the GA have to take a look at the funding now that they're giving them, maybe give a bit of that down. But look at, there's four Ulster teams going to play Division 1 next year. Armagh joining, Monaghan, Tyrone and Donegal. And we sent down a team in Division 3, Ulster. That's not Dublin's fault. Kerry were beaten by Cork. And we talked about Kerry being the team that was going to put up to them. They were beaten by Cork. That wasn't Dublin's fault. So I think everybody, counties, and you said it exactly right, take a look at ourselves. Let's really admire and enjoy them. And isn't it great that we're alive? We said ourselves, great that we're alive, that when this, you know, Donegal team, the run they've had this last 10 years or so, been great and everything else. But it's great to be alive watching this Dublin, great Dublin team as well, what they've achieved. And I think it's brilliant from that point of view. And I really enjoy watching them playing football. They will be beaten sometime. Please God, maybe Mayo, I'd love to see Mayo. One and all Ireland would be great. Maybe it'll happen the weekend.
Martin McHugh, who's hoping that Mayo can pull off a win, but feels that Dublin will be the All-Ireland champions once again this weekend. Okay, let's look ahead to some of the big weekend's fixtures, of course, including Premier League games from Cross Channel. It's time for Ahead of the Game.
Ahead of the Game with Leon Blanche in association with Boyle Sports.
Leon, welcome back to Ahead of the Game once again.
Thank you, Oisín. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Looking forward to the action this weekend. And obviously, everybody's going to be watching these All-Ireland finals on Saturday evening. It's Dublin and Mayo again, Leon. Mayo came close on a couple of occasions to upsetting the Dubs. Given the strange year that we've had in 2020, is this now maybe the year that finally Sam Maguire's going to go west?
Well, hopefully not from my perspective, because I'd be obviously cheering on the boys in blue. But you're right in what you've said. I mean, if you look at 13, 16, the replay in 16, and then 17, there was a total of a 3-point differential in those three All-Irelands, but there was four matches. So that goes to show you a kick of a ball is the only difference between Dublin and Mayo in those four hardly fought contests. Now, Dublin did pull away from Mayo last year in the semi-final. They actually blitzed them. I think it was inside 12 minutes. They got 2 goals and 6 points at the start of the second half, and it just completely derattled Mayo. But Mayo, the one thing I'll say about them, they keep coming back to the well. They're the only side I really feel that doesn't fear Dublin. I think they're going to go toe-to-toe with the Dubs, and I think that's the only way to try and beat this Dublin team. If you give them time, they're very good with the ball in possession. Their kind of scoring percentage shots are always around about the 8 to the 8.5 out of 10. They don't take stupid pop shots from anywhere. So if you let them have the ball, they will eventually find a man in a position to kick a score. So I do feel Mayo are right to have a go at Dublin. I'm really looking forward to this game. Look, the Mayo midfield are quite inexperienced. They're going to come up against Brian Fenton, who for me is just, I mean, he's just a Rolls Royce, even if I can get it out, as a footballer. And he's going to have a big say on this All-Ireland final. The big question mark for me will probably be two. Who does Lee Keegan man mark? Does he try and mark Con O'Callaghan, who absolutely destroyed him last year? Or does he try and mark Kieran Kilkenny? And then the other big question I have is, will Mayo leave Aidan O'Shea in around the square? Now, there seems to be a lot of talk that Dublin are susceptible to a high ball. I haven't seen it yet. I've seen a few counties try and play a long ball in. But the one thing about Aidan O'Shea, I will say, is he's probably got the best hands and the biggest physique out of all those players that could pose this Dublin side a bit of problems in and around the goals. I think there will be goals in this game. I think both teams will score a goal. Mayo gave up Tipperary some big chances. Also, Dublin will afford you chances. It's whether you can take them. And I think this could be a high-scoring game. I hope it is for GAA football in general. We need a good final. But I still feel, Oisín, Dublin will just have a little bit too much for Mayo. I just feel the players that don't start, they'll be itching to get on. The likes of Paul Mannion, the likes of Cormac Costello, Brian Howard, Kevin McManaman hasn't seen much game time. These are all multiple All-Ireland winners, and I just think the strength and depth of Dublin's bench will get them over the line. But I'm really expecting a closely fought All-Ireland football final.
Yeah, it could be a day of double joy for Dublin on Sunday, because under-20s are playing Galway in the first game in the under-20 All-Ireland, Leon.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, they've got to carry the favourite tag as well. They're a slight shade of odds on, not as short a price as the senior guys, who are 2-7, which I actually think is a ridiculous price. It's too short in an All-Ireland final. But the young guys, the under-20s, these are the stars of the future. These are the guys who want to be, hopefully, pushing up against the senior lads in years to come. But Galway have been really impressive too this year. This is, even though Dublin are favourites, this could go either way. Galway, I've been watching them, and this young kind of brand of football that is obviously being passed down from Padraig Joyce, from the senior team, they play a beautiful, expansive game of ball. And this could be a really exciting final just to watch and have a look, because I've no doubt there will be some stars in the future. I'm actually going to go for Galway in this one. I think they can. It's not going to be a big shock, because Dublin are only slight favourites, but I think the under-20s is going to head west.
Okay, let's go to the Premier League action this weekend. First game up, we're going to look at Everton against Arsenal. Arsenal's poor Premier League form continuing this week, but Everton go into the tie on Saturday off the back of a huge result beating Leicester midweek, Leon.
Absolutely. I mean, well, look, I suppose it's off the back of two huge results, beating Chelsea at home first, then going to Leicester and beating Leicester. Leicester's home form has been terrible this year. I think they've lost 4 already in the Premier League. But this is a big game. Arsenal, they drew at home to Southampton on the back of that 1-0 defeat against Burnley. The only thing I will say is they got another man sent off. A silly second yellow card from Gabriel. So when you put it all into context, it wasn't a bad point. But when you look at Everton, you'd have to say they'll be licking their lips at the prospect of facing Arsenal. Ancelotti, they started the season very well. They had their kind of little blip. They've won the last two. They're right there in the European contention. And I'd actually think Arsenal will get beaten here. I like what Everton are doing. They're very solid at the back. They're not giving you much chances. It's a real Ancelotti kind of team in terms of how they play. They're missing a couple of players. Seamus Coleman is a huge loss at right back. Lucas Digne is a massive loss at left back. When them two guys come back into the team, I think Everton will be even stronger again. So I do fancy Everton to beat Arsenal, and their odds on for a reason. Arsenal, for me at the minute, there's just something missing, O'Sheen. I don't know what it is. Like, Arteta seems to talk a good game. He's trying to play a kind of a possession style based, but you've got to go forward with the ball. There's no point in keep passing it sideways and backwards. You're not going to score goals that way. Good for them that Aubameyang got off the score sheet against Southampton, but I think the Toffees will claim all 3 points.
Okay, elsewhere at the weekend, Spurs are hosting Leicester. Both sides going into the game off the back of defeats. Tottenham now find themselves 3 points behind Liverpool in the table. Come the weekend, they could be 6 before they get started against Leicester. So is now the time where the pressure's going to really come on Spurs and the questions are going to be asked, Leon?
Well, look, they've got to bounce back. And I mean, I don't know what game Jose Mourinho was watching last night, if he thought that the best team lost. I thought Liverpool were very good in possession of the ball. Spurs probably had a couple of chances that they could have taken. And it was a real kind of hit, like hit you on the break as quick as we can. But this will be different now. Leicester will come to White Hart Lane and they're going to sit back. And they'll be saying to Spurs, you come at us and try and break us down. And this is the reason why Leicester have been better on the road than they have been at home. Because on the road, they can afford to sit back and hit you on the break. When you're at home, you've got to change tactics. This is a huge game, because if Spurs were to lose it, it would be a bitter pill to swallow, back-to-back defeats. I actually think Leicester will go there and get a point. I just think Spurs at the minute, Harry Kane and Son are world-class. They're absolutely world-class. I still don't think they're back four is up to winning a Premier League. Their midfield is okay, but it doesn't really get you that much excited about. So I think Leicester can go there and they can get a share and take a point away from home, which would be a very good result for Brendan Rodgers and his men.
Manchester United are hosting Leeds United, two sides who, we're going back nearly 20 years at this stage, that had a huge rivalry in the top flight of English football. Leeds are back in the top flight. They're going not too bad. Given United's home form, would a draw, a share of the spoils, be a good enough result for Leeds on Sunday?
Yeah, well, look, it was a much-needed win, Oisin, for Leeds against Newcastle. They scored five goals, which was great to see. And I've actually been impressed with Leeds. I think most people have. And probably the amount of points that they've actually accumulated hasn't done them any justice. I think they've played better and they should have more points than what they actually have on the board at the moment. But this is a tricky game against Manchester United. There's no love lost between these two sides. They don't really like each other too much. And it's going to be a fascinating affair. Solskjaer, I'm always feeling that he's one or two games away from being right under pressure. It's a little bit unfair to him, actually, because one man I'd be getting rid of if I was Manchester United is Paul Pogba. I just think the sooner the better he leaves the club, I think the club will be better all round. I just don't think whatever he brings or his agent brings, it's not helping United. So I think this could be a closely fought affair. And you're right, you make a very important point. Their home form this year, Man United, has not been good enough in the Premier League. Their away form is exceptional. And I think Leeds will be able to go there under Bielsa and not just sit back, because that's not how Bielsa plays, because he does like to get the ball back as soon as he loses it. It's a similar style of play to Klopp. And I think Leeds could be good enough here to take a share of the spoils. They should have taken it at Anfield. They were very unlucky to lose that game 4-3. They played exceptionally well against Man City when they drew 1-1. Against the big teams, Leeds are not in any way, shape or form fearing the bigger side. So for me, yeah, I'm going to sit on the fence here and go for a draw.
Ahead of the game with Leon Blanche in association with Boyle Sports.
The final fixture we're going to look at is in Scotland. It's the League Cup final. Celtic taking on Hearts. I suppose just like Solskjaer, you're always feeling that Neil Lennon is a game or two away from getting sacked. But a piece of silverware would certainly be a welcome boost around Parkhead this weekend, Leon.
Yeah, look, it certainly would. And look, we saw last night what can happen. You know, the Rangers losing. What was it in? Was it injury time? They got beaten 3-2, I think that result was. So look, this is a massive game for Neil Lennon. It's a massive game for Celtic. They go into this cup final as overwhelming favourites. Now, I don't really see where that's coming from, because the form hasn't been good. We all know that Celtic are not playing as well as they can play. But this could be just a point in the season. If you can put in a big performance for your manager, put in a performance for yourself. Some of these players haven't been playing to the maximum of their capability. And they need to stand up. They need to actually say, right, we're Glasgow Celtic Football Club. We need to start playing to what we should be doing. Getting the ball down, attacking teams who are inferior, and Hearts are inferior to Celtic. So I'm hoping, Oisin, that they can put in a decent performance. Would I be backing them? No, because they're way too short. But I just hope that they can put in the performance for Neil Lennon, who I also feel has been harshly treated. It just always kind of baffles me a lot of the time that, yes, he is the manager, and yes, it's up to him to try and get the players to play. But if some of the players are just not bothered and don't look as if they care, then it's very hard for a manager to try and get something out of them. So here's hoping Celtic can beat Hearts.
Okay, Leon, that's it for the section tonight. Due to it being Christmas Eve, there's no score programme next Thursday, but you are coming back to us on Sunday the 27th in our review of the year programme on Sunday the 27th. So thanks for joining us tonight, and have a nice Christmas until we talk again.
And a very happy Christmas and many happy returns to you, Oisin, and everybody at Highland Radio.
That's Leon Blanche, and that's it for another Score programme this week. If you did miss any of the show, you can listen back in the playback section of HighlandRadio.com just after 8 o'clock this evening. And that's the Score programme actually for Christmas and indeed for the year. Next Thursday is Christmas Eve, so we'll not have a show for you, but we will of course be back in the new year with more on the Score on a Thursday night. Our next sport here in Highland is tomorrow morning after the 8:30 news. I'll have that for you. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Thursday.
Highland Sport is brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure, with everything for the Donegal fan this Christmas. O'Neill's Donegal jerseys, training and leisure wear from the Raven Range, and stocking fillers like Donegal face masks and bobble hats. See michaelmurphysports.ie.